The Femme Perspective with Tally Briggs.
Hi. Wow. What a week this is turning into. I thought Saturday was bad, but then this week has been like falling down the rabbit hole and I have yet to hit bottom. But first things first. This show's beverage is San Matias Gran Reserva Añejo. Yes, it's a fine tequila. It's not Chinaco, but it is 100% blue agave. Imported by me via Cabo San Lucas and the Star Princess. It has a little bit of a kind of a sweet nose to it. I love that little burn that goes down. It's just so nice and mellow. It's a little nutty with a honey overtone. Very much honey tasting. It's really nice. Okay. All right. First of all, could Saturday, June 5th have been any blacker? A mere 2.5 hours before post time of the most exciting horse race in recent memory, the news flashed. Reagan dead at 93. My first thought was that at last his family is free. Believe me, I know my father died of Alzheimer's, and it is the most hideous and cruel disease ever, mainly because its circle of devastation is as wide as the victim's friends and family can possibly reach. Its damage is ruthless and leaves everyone helpless in its wake. My second thought was, no! This will take all the thunder away from the Smarty Party. Yeah, right. A small circle of friends came over, and we sat down to watch the Belmont. Expectations were high, and the excitement was palpable. Joy became something very, very tangible. You could just feel it in your hands. And what a race! What a pace Smarty Jones set right out of the gate. It was glorious. All the way to the final furlong. And what? Who the hell is that horse? Then it was over. It was unbelievable. No one could speak. Everyone felt as though they had been punched in the gut. Silence was the order of the day, even for the drive down to the Home Depot Center for the Los Angeles Galaxy soccer game, which couldn't even lift our spirits as we proceeded to get spanked by Kansas City. Damn it! Of course, the deification of St. Ronnie has been nonstop. When did I fall into this parallel universe where lies have become the norm and the truth is not worth the breath it takes to tell it? Responsible for the end of the Cold War? What? The fall of the Berlin Wall and the end of the Soviet Union? Who the hell are these two people talking about? What happened to the Reagan who killed the Fairness Doctrine? Look it up if you don't know what I'm talking about or have never heard of the Fairness Doctrine. It will blow your mind. What happened to the guy who refused to say the word AIDS? Or was responsible for dealing arms for hostages with Iran and not letting those same hostages come home 3 months sooner so he could win an election? I remember Reagan as the daddy of deregulation, which was the massive myth that corporations could police themselves, which led to such devastating events like the giant savings and loan scandal and set the stage for Enron, the energy rape of California, and the likes of the modern robber baron, now better known as your average CEO, who gets a $45 million retirement package while outsourcing all of his employees to India. and I'm one of them. Yep. Almost 6 months later, my unemployment about to run out. I'm still without a job. I am beginning bartender school next week, so keep your fingers crossed for me, everyone. Hopefully I will land an awesome place. I remember Ronnie, before he sold his soul to special interests, being a great Democrat and was the leader of one of the largest unions on the planet, to which I belong, the Screen Actors Guild, or I remember him also as the governor of California and made abortion legal before Roe versus Wade. But you won't hear any of that in today's so-called liberal media. Nor will you hear that once he got a taste of the wealth and greed of what his new corporate masters had to offer, would do anything to please them, including firing everyone in air traffic control union, putting America's skies into great danger, and what is most likely responsible for the fact that this essential branch of our air transportation is still largely working with antiquated equipment to this day. Where is the Ronnie who was cozy with such bloody regimes as Marcos, Duarte, or Duvalier? Or the Reagan who supported, funded, and armed not only Saddam Hussein, but especially Osama bin Laden? I feel like I've slipped into Neo's Matrix, and almost everyone has swallowed the Saint Reagan pill but me. No, I'm left to wander and wonder at this looking-glass land until it either drives me mad or I find my way to the lovely village of Stepford, Connecticut, and be assimilated. I can't be the only one who can see this or feels this way. I know I'm not alone. And I guess everyone spewing all this awesome Ronnie, oh, he was the best ever, thinks that America's full of sheep. And you know, they might be right. You say a thing long enough and it becomes the truth. Well, I'm not buying it. And if that weren't bad enough, we now slip into bizarro land where John Ashcroft and the monkey administration is above the law, can refuse to turn over memos demanded by Congress, yet not invoke executive privilege or any other law, but just say, no, I refuse to turn over these memos, putting himself in complete contempt of Congress. But Congress just stares and turns into Scooby-Doo and doesn't seem to understand that they should throw his ass in prison. Do your freaking jobs, people. God, I need a margarita. And I need it in Cabo, and I need it now. Although I have to say, the more over the top about Reagan they get, the more blowback there is likely to be. At least that's what I'm hoping for, so that part is good. Because I know I'm getting sick of it. And I can read the letters in the LA Times, and I know there's other people getting sick of it too. And I just hope everybody out there that hears my voice is as beyond sick of it as I am. It makes me want to spew. Okay, what isn't pissing me off this week? Well, not only has season 2 of Queer Eye for the Straight Guy started, which I love, call me crazy, but so has Bravo's new show, Blowout, about Jonathan from the Great West Hollywood Salon and his new Beverly Hills Salon. He's moving up in the world. I am so sucked in. He is the modern version of Warren Beatty in Shampoo. It is so great. He is such a California surf dude who does hair and has the class to not go ahead and hire the blonde babe anyway, because even if she can't cut hair around him without shaking, he wants to date her. No, he didn't hire her, but called her back and asked her to dinner. I think that's a little classy. Okay, some of it bugs me outright, like the completely staged impromptu phone calls to some of the people he wants to come to work for him who just happen to be walking in Manhattan in the snow and have a camera crew following them when they get the phone call. Hey, dude, want to come work for me in Beverly Hills? Please. Other than that, I'm in. I guess it's a good thing I wasn't in Vegas this last week, and I'd have been very tempted to put a lot of money on Smarty Jones. I so thought that was a sure thing. And you know what? It was a sure thing until the last, furlong. Yeah, the last little bit of that mile and a half, he was there. Oh, so sad. And I'm sure those of you who watched it saw it, or just as sad as I am. I'm not the only one. Anyway, that's all for now. I'm Tally, and this has been another episode of La Perspective Femme.
Who's a bigger flip-flopper than George Bush? This little thug in Iraq, Sadr, with the army that we just handed over power to and his cities. For the longest time, it was, we got to kill Sadr, we got to imprison him. What I meant to say is we're going to work with him. We're going to work with him. That's not a flip-flop. And by the way, on that score, one of the rationales for us going into Iraq was that we have to show the Arabs strength. That's the only thing they understand in that part of the world is strength. And I would agree with that assessment. That is the only thing they understand. But you don't really show strength when you walk away from a fight like we did, when you turn it over to him. Suddenly we had the Ba'athist general coming back. We turned power over to him. When they talk about only understanding strength, they're talking about when, like, Assad killed 20,000 people in the city of Hamas. They're talking about when Saddam Hussein said the Americans cannot take 25,000 dying in one battle. That's strength to them. We haven't shown any strength. To them, we're just another big, pitiful giant that's getting its ass kicked by a third world country. When we were talking a few months ago about Bush being a draft dodger and that whole controversy, and people said it's not relevant now, it is so relevant. If Bush says he's a war president, you know what? If we're going to be at war and need a war president, I want a president who's been to war. John Kerry understands war in a way George Bush never will. You know, this is a perfect storm of a mess in Iraq because we have a president who proudly says he doesn't read the paper, never traveled overseas, never really cared to learn about overseas, and never served overseas. So he doesn't understand what it's like overseas. And that's why he has this two-dimensional view of what goes on over there. He gets frustrated with us because we don't understand. Saddam Hussein, 9/11, the haters for our freedom. What don't you marshmallow heads get about that? That's his whole worldview. John Kerry has been to war. He's like a guy who's a vegetarian now because he's been to the slaughterhouse. I think he would have kept us out of war.
What do you make of the 9/11 Commission and its work?
Another Bush flip-flop, by the way. Again, that's not an attack on the president. That's a fact. He fought it. And then he said, yeah, great idea, when he couldn't fight it anymore. So I don't know why he is not labeled a flip-flopper. I could name 10 other instances where he's done the same thing. But as far as the commission itself, I found it, one, frightening that neither administration, neither his administration nor Clinton administration, would admit that in any way they hadn't made terrorism a top priority. They maintain that lie, that it was a top priority for us. And my question is, if this is what happened when it was a top priority, what happens when it's not a top priority for you?
Now, hey, I'm all for Bill Maher. He speaks the truth 90-10. But how is Bill Maher going to blame Clinton for this? There was no attack under Clinton, at least not in America. What did Bill Maher want Clinton to do? Weekly remind us that a terrorist strike could come at any time, and then what, years go by and nothing happens, and Clinton's constantly warning us a terrorist attack could occur? In whose interest would that alarm serve? One other thing to mention is the Barry Switzer factor. When Barry Switzer was coach of Oklahoma, they asked him if he was going to beat either Texas or Nebraska, I forget. He says, well, worst we can do is a tie. And they said, what do you mean, coach, what do you mean? He said, well, I got the Selman brothers. I don't think they're going to score on us, so we may fight to a 0-0 tie, but I'm pretty sure they won't score on us. What's the point, Bart? What's the point? There were zero terrorist attacks under Clinton in the United States besides the first World Trade Center, and those people were caught and imprisoned. And Bill Maher wants Clinton to have terrorism on a higher priority, but how much higher can you get than zero? Maybe he's just trying to play both, you know, oh, I'm a middle-of-the-roader guy, I see the evil in both sides, but if there was zero successful attacks on America under Clinton, how are you going to say, well, yeah, him and Bush both? Got to play fair, Bill. I realize I can be a bit of a Clinton cheerleader sometimes, but zero successful attacks? You remember, and we don't have any way to verify this, but Clinton said they prevented the LAX terrorist attack. The tunnels in New York were going to blow up. Several other things. I don't have a staff. I don't know what they were. But Clinton listed all of them on Letterman one night. Great piece of tape. Wish I knew where that was. But then Bush went to sleep. When they came to Bush and said, Al-Qaeda's going to do something spectacular in the very near future involving airplanes, Bush said, fine, I'm going to Crawford, Texas. So, Bill, I think you should be fair in your criticism.
That's one thing. The other thing is Richard Clark. I don't think anyone got it that maybe the guy was telling the truth and was scorned. It seemed to be an either-or in the press. That's what I got. Either you thought he was telling the truth, or you thought that he was a scorned woman who the administration had let go. Why can't it be both? I think what happened is that he would have shut his mouth if they had treated him right, but he was scorned, and so he told what he knew. And I think the indication of how the Bush administration treated the issue of terrorism is in the person of Richard Clark. Richard Clark was the terrorism office, both in the Clinton years, and then they kept him over. And when the Bushies got in, they moved him out.
In other words, a disgruntled employee may have something to be disgruntled about.
Larry, congratulations for figuring out the super obvious. Please, how did you get that job?
Right. And how come these people like Condoleezza Rice, but others always say the same thing? No one could envision, that was her view, no one could envision flying planes into buildings. You know what? Stop saying that, Ms. Rice. You couldn't envision it. Plenty of people envisioned it. The terrorists envisioned it. Some of the people in your own FBI and CIA envisioned it. Those two little jerks at Columbine envisioned it. Tom Clancy envisioned it. You didn't envision it. And by the way, when you have national security in your title and stenciled on your door, it sort of is your job to envision it.
I wondered how John Stewart was going to handle Reagan's death. Was he going to ignore it? You know, years ago, I'm trying to think, it might have been the day Reagan got shot. Seems like it was on a Tuesday or something. That Saturday, everybody was wondering, what is Saturday Night Live going to do with this monstrously serious story? The president at the time had a bullet removed an inch from his heart and was expected to live, but it was obviously the dominant story of the week. And so when they started out on Saturday Night Live, the weekend update, they said, tonight's top story isn't funny, so we're going to go to story number two. I thought it was a great way to handle that. I wonder if Jon Stewart was going to do something like that. But no, he bravely went right into the belly of the whale, or whatever that's called.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist. You know that. I know that. But I can't help but think that Ronald Reagan's death... Now, let me do this. Who had the most to gain? Perhaps Jennifer Lopez? Perhaps to take attention from her 18th marriage? Did J-Lo kill Ronald Reagan? I guess the people I feel worse for, I guess, are Carter and Ford. Because they got to be watching all this thinking, we're not getting that. We're not getting anything near that. We're not, you know what? If I have any advice to Carter and Ford tonight, it would be this. Die saving a baby. It's really the only way you're going to get anywhere near together, the two of you, running into a burning building. I'm watching the Fox News. This is literally the Fox News reporter, John Gibson, very nice man. He was on the program. He's talking to Newt Gingrich. He says to Newt Gingrich, apropos of nothing, would Ronald Reagan approve of what George W. Bush did in Iraq?
Newt Gingrich doesn't miss a beat?
I believe he would.
Really? Because he hasn't been aware of anything for like 10 years. So, but you know what he would be thinking. It's almost as though they are waiting for him to die. They waited so that he couldn't go. What? Tell Newt Gingrich to shut the up. That's not what I think. I don't think that at all.
Still, as tough as the week off will be on Kerry's campaign, the hiatus will be hardest on presidential strategist Karl Rove, who will be spending the week kicking puppies and tripping blind kids in order to stay, quote, sharp.
You know, talking about OPEC puts me in mind of 2002,
a simpler time when the energy interests we were held hostage to were American ones.
You may remember the scandal surrounding Enron. At the time, Enron was also accused of illegally manipulating utility prices during California's energy crisis, a charge the company vigorously denied. And given the complexity and dryness of the subject, it seemed impossible the charges could ever be proven, unless somehow somebody turned up some sort of smoking gun. Which brings us to last week, when a flaming gun was unearthed in the form of taped phone conversations of various Enron employees made in 2000 and 2001. In one of the tapes, two Enron traders discuss a colleague's illegal manipulation of the California power market.
He just f***ed California. He steals money from California to the tune of about a million.
Can we rephrase that?
Okay, he arbitrages the California market to the tune of $1 million or two a day.
Those greedy mother arbitragers. Those. Oh! A lawyer for Enron defended the traders by saying, quote, people at Enron sometimes talked like Barnacle Bill the Sailor. Yes, that's what's upsetting about their quote. The profanity. It's an interesting argument, although Barnacle Bill's preferred euphemism for stealing is, of course, arbitrage. Arb. But the lawyer also says the conversations were, quote, taken out of context. Oh, so maybe those traders are good guys. Let's listen to this tape to hear Enron executives' reaction as they watched a deadly summer wildfire in California knock out power lines, causing energy prices to spike.
Burn, baby, burn. That's a beautiful thing.
How do you explain that one? Burn, baby, burn. Was that out of context? Perhaps they had prefaced that statement with, wouldn't we be douchebags if we said... Perhaps your clients could have been watching the fire from Disco Inferno, perhaps. Well, if you still have any doubts as to just how greedy, rapacious, vulgar, and evil these people are, I give you this conversation between two traders discussing California's attempt to make Enron give back some of their illegal profits.
I'm taking all the money back from you guys. All that money you guys stole from those poor grandmothers of California.
Yeah, Grandma Millie, man.
Yeah, now she wants her money back for all the power you've charged right up, jammed right up her for $250 a megawatt hour.
The only thing more heartbreaking, honestly, was the call placed by another Enron trader to Grandma Millie herself.
Is this Grandma Millie?
Yes, dear.
I'm taking your energy, bitch.
What? But I need energy to bake pies for the little orphans.
Well, your orphans can eat my ass.
Oh, dear Lord.
God can't help you now, you stupid old whore.
My hip just cracked from sadness.
You are listening to Bart Cop Radio at BartCop.com. Keeper of the Democratic Jewels.
Well, there you have it. Bart Cop Radio, Show 42. the Pig Boy Reagan beatdown. Hope you liked it. I'll get to work on show 43. See you soon. Thanks for your support. Appreciate you subscribing.